I've been at this for almost 40 years because I confronted the environmental problems when I worked in the rainforests of Southeast Asia. And gradually over years I became involved in other areas and began to see how the church needed to change its understanding, its theology, its understanding of sacraments, its spirituality. So to see something like this, okay, in other encyclicals, Pope Benedict, Pope John Paul, they had a little bit, maybe three articles out of a long encyclical. But to have one encyclical totally focused on the cry of the earth and the cry of the poor is just a revelation. And he captures all that you need to capture, the extent of this environmental problem. It's not just a small problem. Every life system or ecosystem in the world has been impacted. The poor who do little to cause it, for example, in climate change, Africa is responsible for 5% of greenhouse gas emissions for the last 100 years. And it is suffering most because of droughts and because of floods in various areas in Africa. So to have someone with the moral authority of the Pope talking about the extent of it, talking about also the way we need to deal with it rapidly. This is not something we can wait around and say, well, on the one hand, on the other. The window, particularly in climate change, the window of opportunity is heading towards close. We have at the very most 15 to 20 years with the carbon budget. Otherwise, we're going to bring about changes that we now will be talking about at a geological order of magnitude. In other words, it's like the great geological changes, the lower Carboniferous period. They were 20 million years. The last one, the Cretaceous period, lasted for 60 million years. We're now doing this, and they're beginning to call it the Anthropocene. For example, if you had a 4-degree rise on global temperatures below the pre-industrial era, that would change the Amazon from being a tropical rainforest into a savanna. It would be an extraordinary and irreversible change. It would mean we would probably be not standing here because we'd be standing in water. So these changes need to get out into the public world, and the rapidity that we need to address them, we need to commit ourselves, we need to get a new path. All of those are possible if we get leadership.
Yeah. And I mean, who better to offer leadership than the Pope? But you were also involved with some of the research and some of the writing and some of the input of Laudato Si. So that's a huge change for you too, because you were sort of, I won't say a renegade on the outside, but you certainly were somebody who was maybe on the fringes of the church. So to be brought into something like that must have been huge for you.
Yes, it was. I was on the fringe. Oh, environment. Oh, McDonald's doing something. And you're doing something about that, you know, and that was the way. I'm not interested in the periphery. This is the central concern of being a Christian today. One's relationship with God, with fellow humans, and with the environment. And that's the way we'll be totally into the future. Now, he has given a recognition of this. He has said this is the way to be a Christian in the future. The document itself is way beyond where most Catholic Christians are today, including religious and priests. And I hope that really good processes are made available for people to begin to take on board the huge changes that have taken place. For example, in the whole area of biodiversity, other creatures now have intrinsic value. That's in value in themselves. Until very recently, you know, other creature, well, if I need food, I go. So it has instrumental value. Now, so that's an enormous change. It's an enormous change to talk about a moral dimension to your attitude and action towards the environment, because we've never thought like that. We think we can go out and use mercury and gold. If we're looking for gold, we can do monocrop agriculture, we can cut down the forest. They're maybe not the best things to do, but they're not sins. He said, actually, these are sins. The other wonderful thing about Laudato Si is it's an open invitation. He said, I'm the Bishop of Rome. This is how I see it. Let's have a dialogue about it. Do you see it like that? If you have something to offer, you're welcome. You don't need to be under our roof. You don't need to be a Christian or a Catholic, because the concern for the planet, this common home, and he uses that in the Latin, domus communis, this common home, it's not just for humans, it's for other creatures as well into the future. So yes, and he writes well too. He has a flair for language. He talked about the loving sister and mother. You know, it's not language you'd have expected from Benedict or even from John Paul. You also know he has faced these issues in Latin America. And I know, for example, he was the final editor of the Aparecida document in 2007, where a lot of these issues were discussed and positions taken on them. And you can see that from the encyclical itself. So it's like myself. I mean, I never studied ecology. I studied ecology on the run, in a sense of finding out what the Dipteroca forests were and all of that. But even those early years, no one could disabuse me of the idea that this was very important, because I'd seen it with my own eyes. They may have all kinds of theory, and they might know a lot of grave authors in this area of environment, but I had actually seen it, and you can see he's speaking out of that world. He's not a climate change expert, and he shouldn't be, but he knows sufficient about it to make the moral, religious, and spiritual connection. And the pastoral connection, and that's why I think it's so wonderful, you know.
Yeah, I mean, you talk there, the morality of it, as you say, that is revolutionary in a sense, because we've always focused on morality around other areas. We've had lots of moral teachings, whereas the idea that carbon emissions are a moral issue is huge, really, isn't it?
It is. It's extraordinary. I mean, to be fair, we in the Catholic Church, unfortunately, have focused marriage or issues around sexuality, you know. Which I think is crazy, but that's the way we've done it. But this has opened up an extraordinary area for moral reflection and behaviour, and I think it will have a transforming. If parishes and dioceses, if they really got into locally finding out, what's my parish like? We're going down next week for our summer schools, and we've done this over the years, to come to understand from the rocks up, you know, what is this wonderful place? It's around since the Silurian, you know, 370 million years ago. It's our home. We're connected with it. We're really trying to get to know better its flora and fauna and our connectedness. Now, that's the kind of attitude you need to have this new, transformed engagement with planet Earth. That I'm not the masters, you know, the Baconian masters, the Promethean, as the Pope puts it in the encyclical. We are creatures, we have intelligence, we can make choices, but we're part of the whole. And if we continue making the choices we have made, economically and politically, it's like cutting the wood from under the branch we're sitting on, and we're going to suffer. And he's very strong, again, almost new moral thinking, intergenerational justice. We have to ask ourselves, is what we're doing to the planet now going to mean that the planet, for the next generation of people, not just people, but other creatures, is going to be less beautiful and less fruitful. And that's a new, I mean, I never, in all my years studying theology, no one ever asked about intergenerational justice. It was just, we looked on the earth as a stage. There were only two histories. There was my personal history and the social history of the nation or the group. Everything else was static. Now we know that's not true. The earth is a history. We know where it came from. We know so much more. So we can be even more intimate with it than the likes of Francis of Assisi, because we know so much more about it, and we know we're connected to us. They're cousins. They might be a million generations ago, but they're cousins. So. Mm-hmm.
And do you find now, even in terms of your own books and your own talks, is there a renewed interest? Are you experiencing a bit of a revival, if you like?
Yeah, there is. Even the first book I published, it took me 2 years to get the first book published. I have a little thing I brought into Trinity the other night. My good friend Leonor, who works on these things, it was 1986. We put together the 23 letters of refusal. We read your manuscript with interest, and sorry. We read, sorry, 2 years it took. And if I hadn't known a very famous Irish priest, Enda McDonough, when I came home from the Philippines, I gave him the text, and I said, this is exciting. I said, you might think it's exciting, Enda, but no one is going to publish it for me. So he actually was, at that stage, he wrote to a friend of his in Chapman, and that was the beginning, and it was the first book published in English, this side of the Atlantic, on ecology and religion. And I'm delighted, to see that the things that I held dear and the place I thought it should have is now a fact.